You're listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar podcast, talking all things fundraising, charities, nonprofits, and more. Here's your host, as always, Simon Scriver.
Welcome back to yet another charity podcast. And there are lots of charity podcasts out there, aren't there? But you only listen to maybe one or two, don't you? There's only a couple of really, really good ones. And I'm fortunate today to have a guest with me. It is my nemesis, my podcast enemy, Beth Crackles. Hello, Beth. How are you?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, I'm happy to be a nemesis.
Are you finally? You've made it to the nemesis stage.
Yeah. I think the charity sector needs a good spat. Like, we should have a Twitter spat. Like,
that's a good idea.
And whoever she fights with, I don't know.
That's good promo for this podcast, actually. That's
yeah. Yeah, you could Photoshop our faces into Taylor Swift or something.
Okay. Yeah, I think we're onto something here. Yeah. We have a weird thing because I think you are my nemesis, but I'm also a fan of your podcast. And I think I know. And so I have to balance my insults and abuse with the compliments because you do some really good stuff.
Thank you.
So Beth, anyone who perhaps doesn't listen to your podcast or doesn't know you in your other shapes and forms as a fundraiser, who are you?
Oh my goodness, that's a big question. Who am I? So I'm Beth Crackles. I am a freelance funding consultant. I'm based in the north of England after 10 years working in that London. And so I do the career history stuff.
It's really whatever floats your boat. I mean, you what's making you happy these days? You like fundraising, but is your main driver the podcast? Is your main driver blogging? Because you do all these things. You spoke at the same conference as me the other day, so you're a big speaker.
I wouldn't say I'm a big speaker because, as I've already mentioned, I'm quite nervous about speaking on this podcast, which has the potential to be edited. So what I'm about at the moment is trying to broaden my networks in the north of England, I guess. And part of that, so that was part of the driver for my podcast, Cracking Charity Chat. Mm-hmm. I'm doing various bits of freelance work, so working with primarily smaller organizations on their funding strategies, developing cases for support, setting up trusts and foundations fundraising programs.
And is it a big change coming from London? I mean, there's that big divide between London and the rest of the country, I feel sometimes, and you have all the kind of consultants and stuff down there, and you have all the events down there, you have the big charities down there. Are they is it a huge leap? Are people starved up there for consultants like you and for good fundraising training?
I certainly feel almost isolated, I guess, mm-hmm. in terms of how I felt when I was living and working in London, because you can go out every night of the week if you really wanted to a different sort of charity networking event, and they're sort of few and far between up here. So there's some good ones like the Leeds Charity Social and IOF Yorkshire do various bits and bobs, which are great. But it feels like all the training seems to be in London, and the conferences are in London, and they're really expensive. So I kind of have to pick which ones I can, basically which ones I can afford to do in terms of money and in terms of time. What sort of struck me, I guess, about some of the stuff at IOF Yorkshire Conference was that the stuff that I know that I kind of take for granted and sort of expect other fundraisers to know. And I think it's maybe a regional thing that sort of some of the fundamentals are maybe missing.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think probably at the regional ones, you have smaller organizations who, I mean, I met a lot of people at that conference who weren't full-time fundraisers, or they certainly weren't corporate fundraisers and community fundraisers. It was one person looking after everything, or one person reluctantly doing fundraising because they had to as part of their job.
Yeah.
It's just, it can feel like a different world sometimes.
Yeah, and I think coming from smaller charities or where fundraising is part of like the job of running the charity, mm-hmm. then people sort of say they have a lot of experience of fundraising, but it tends to be a lot of application based stuff. So I've worked with like service directors who've been like, I've got loads of experience of fundraising, but actually it's nowhere near relationship fundraising. So that's kind of quite interesting in previous roles, like working on that cultural shift, which is really hard.
I mean, isn't like fundraising is a profession. I mean, this is already turning into a bit of a ranty podcast, which I think is what we were hoping for, is just me and you. we're here for the next 8 hours ranting about stuff. But fundraising is that profession where everyone has experience in it. Like everyone thinks they know a lot about it. You know, I feel like if you're a doctor or a nurse in a nonprofit, you don't have people saying, "Oh yeah, I've seen a doctor. I know how to do this operation."
Yeah, yeah. Whereas if you have a bit like marketing.
Yeah.
I think probably people that work in marketing get like told what works and like they should do some advertising. Yeah. Like, that's not marketing. It's just one tiny bit of the mix. And I think I'm not alone in having been asked to like develop something that goes viral.
Yeah,
I'll get right on that.
Yeah. What's the secret to something viral?
I don't know. Maybe you or Nikki could tell me that.
I don't know. I'll try. And so, in part of your job, I mean, you're going around and you're hearing a lot of people ranting about different things. I've heard people ranting on your podcast. And presumably your clients are ranting and at conferences are ranting. And I think that was the main reason I wanted you on the podcast, is because you're a woman who's got a finger on the pulse. So firstly, I want to kind of suss you out and figure out how to topple you on the podcast charts. But also I want to understand what the trends out there and what's happening out there. And actually, I think that probably is one of the first trends, isn't it? This kind of regional argument, the London argument. And, you know, it came to my mind the other day when I saw this, the Small Charities Coalition are looking for a London-based CEO, even though...
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I would have thought small charities are primarily outside London, but who
I mean, that's interesting. They could look at Sheffield, for example.
And so tell me, Beth, what else are you seeing out there that you think maybe is a recurring thing? It's what's all the flutter online that's caught your eye? What's all your clients talking about that jumps out at you? What's hot right now?
So the stuff that I think is hot right now is basically stuff that I see on social media, really. That's where I see like the rage or like the suppressed rage from people. So stuff around like mental health and imposter syndrome, sexual harassment, gender in fundraising. What else have we got? Like, oh God, like being a working mum.
Yeah.
Like, everybody sort of has an opinion on that. So I saw stuff around like NCVO ran a thing on maybe like women in leadership or something. And it was a morning event, and you contributed to that conversation about like how did parents get there for like 9:30 and stuff.
Yeah.
So I think, there is that. But when do we work? When should we work? You know what I mean? <'Cause>
when are we going to talk about fundraising?
No, I mean, like if you can't start an event at 9:30 in the morning, like people want to leave at like 3:00 to pick their kids up, like I get that, because like I'm gonna clock off in a bit because I need to do the nursery run, but so I totally get it. But I think it's really difficult for employers as well to work out like how to support people, how to get the best out of people, out of parents. I don't just mean mums. And giving them the opportunity to work flexible hours and all the rest of it, but still being able to be present where and when they need to be present, in terms of, you know, if you're managing a team, then I think that you need to be present a fair bit of the time. So I think it's a really difficult one, and I'm really conscious that I'm going to get myself in trouble as like this like anti-feminist who says, well, when do we work? But
well,
yeah,
it's,
there we go.
It's that two sides of it, and I think you're already in huge trouble, Beth. But no, it's that two sides of it, isn't it, where it's trying to see it from the other side and trying to find the balance. You know there's like at least two sides to each of these stories, isn't there? There's like probably several dozen sides to it, and so how do we get it so that it works for everyone? And I don't know what the answer to that is. Like, I can see why someone like NCVO organized their event to start at 9. I can see why they have it at London. You know, we can't appeal to everyone, but at the same time, I suppose it is discriminatory. And I would say that as a parent, and I'm not even a single mother, but as a parent, yeah, it's discriminatory. Yeah. So what's the answer?
You do that thing where you ask the question because you're
exactly.
It's about saying something out loud.
We're not on the cracking charity chat anymore. You're in the hot seat. Give us the answer.
Yeah, I don't know the answer. I want to throw the question back at you. But I'd say, so for example, with that specific event, I wanted to go to that event, but yeah, I couldn't, but basically for childcare reasons, and I don't want to pay like 150 quid to get there and back, mm-hmm. just for that one thing, because it's quite expensive. But I think there are other ways of getting the information. So I understand that they're going to be like writing it up and stuff like that. And that's great. And it means that people who are more remote can obviously have the same information. But for me, being based up north now, it's a bit more about the network and having that face-to-face contact with people.
Of course.
So I guess you've heard people talk about the charity mafia of, I don't know, somewhere North London, like St Albans or something. There's a number of like influential charity people live in that area.
Oh yeah.
No, so
I didn't know that.
How do you not know about the charity mafia? God.
Tell me about the charity mafia.
I think it's like Zoe Amar, Mandy Johnson, Lisa Clavering, Carl Wilding.
They're all in the same area?
I think so, yeah. Helen Trenchard.
Oh, that's exciting.
Who I think is amazing, FYI.
They're all great people that you've been naming.
Yeah, so, but yeah, and then I'm like, oh yeah, I'm just in Sheffield. I think like there might be some other people up here too. Yeah. I don't know them.
Yeah.
So it does feel like everything happens in London.
Who do you see while you're on that? Who do you see as like who's like your charity heroes? Who do you look up to and think like you pay attention to what they say? You learn a lot from
who's generally in the sector.
Yeah. So not just in Sheffield, not just in St Albans, but anywhere. Who's your like? Who would you invite to your fundraising dinner party?
Right. Okay. So there's a few people who I've worked with before who I think are brilliant. So Jo Jenkins.
Yeah.
So I started out as his PA.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Which is cool because he basically did everything himself and then just gave me other work to do, which was good. I think he clocked that I wasn't a very good PA. And if you listen to the podcast with Paul Amadi, you'll hear why.
Oh yeah.
It's basically I sent Paul to like I just sent him on the wrong flight. It was awful. Anyway, we're not gonna go there again. Have to listen to Cracking Charity Chat for that.
Yeah,
But yeah, so Paul Amadi and Joe are both brilliant. And who else do I look at in the sector? Kate Collins, amazing.
Yeah.
Kate Lee, amazing. I love their like chat between each other on Twitter.
Yeah.
It's just because it feels like genuine, you know, like you see stuff on Twitter and it's like, oh my God, I love this person. They're so amazing. And you're just like, oh, behave. But with them, it's like it's genuine and you can see that. And it's fun as well. Nikki Bell for like community stuff. Definitely keep an eye on her. So there's lots of stuff happening on Twitter, but I have this thing where I'm like, God, I feel like I'm not reading enough. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm not engaging online enough. I just feel like I'm in a bit of the backseat quite a bit of the time. And I was sort of speaking to somebody about this like massive insecurity of mine a few weeks ago. And she said, like, there's a whole part of the sector that exists that like not on Twitter.
And yeah.
Like, oh yeah, there is.
Yeah, it's like fucking 98% of the sector isn't on Twitter.
Yeah. So there's like these few dominant people, and not necessarily the people that I've just mentioned, that you feel like you're like, oh, I need to up my game, but actually that's not what. And it's taken me a bit to realise like that's not what I'm about. So. Mm-hmm. You know, like I don't really have an aspiration to be a conference speaker necessarily. Like it'd be nice to do the odd bit, but it's not like it, that just takes me way out of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's not what I aspire to do. So there's such a lot about personal brand at the moment, isn't there? Mm. And I think that so here I am, I'm ranting. Are you ready?
Yeah,
So one of the things that that frustrates me in the world in general, as well as like within the sector, is that people like say and do things that I feel are just about their personal brand as opposed to genuinely moving an issue forward.
Oh yeah.
Or supporting an issue. So, yeah. You know,
like Beth, just to let you know, I'm a feminist. Hashtag feminist.
Yeah.
Changefundraising.com.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm gonna use like my personal Facebook friends as an example of this rather than charity people, because I don't want my career to end. But things like, you know, if you like face paint a rainbow on your face like once a year and are like, oh, so into like LGBT issues, it's like that, come on. Like, yeah. If you're going to say that, you need to up your game a bit. But then I do also see that, you know, we don't have the time or capacity to get behind every issue ever. So you know, I'm trying to put forward a balanced viewpoint then. But, yeah, I think there are conversations in the sector which could be moved forward in easier, more well-thought-through ways.
Well, there's a lot of talk, isn't there? Like it just feels like we're just I feel like this is the theme of everything you've been saying, is that we're just talking about everything as opposed to doing it sometimes. And it's like sometimes I'm conscious on my podcast or at conferences or wherever or blogs that actually very few of them are about fundraising anymore. Like the fundraising blogs are all about you know, other issues which affect us as a sector, like diversity and like mental health and imposter syndrome, mm-hmm. like you've said. But actually, at what stage are we learning about fundraising and trying to be better fundraisers?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that.
No. Should I do my little imposter syndrome rant?
Tell me.
Should I try and go there?
Please do.
So mental health and imposter syndrome, sort of really close to my heart, having struggled with imposter syndrome definitely. And I think that's partly from coming from a PA role where people are like, hang on, what's this girl doing? She was like taking notes and now she's like saying that she understands strategy. Mm. Yes, I remember being sat in this meeting when I was at RNIB and I was a PA and I was like reading books like on fundraising in my spare time. And I'd read this thing, Breakthrough Thinking for Nonprofit Organizations by Bernard Ross. And it was at the time when everybody was setting up like innovation teams, because like innovation happened over there as opposed to throughout the organization. So I was involved with like setting up the innovation team. But prior to that, I was sat in this meeting and somebody said, oh, like there are these like some Japanese words for it or something. And this is embarrassing because I can't remember what they are, but I was like, oh yeah, it's this and this. And it's basically one is like incremental and one's transformational change. Yeah. And everybody just like looked at me like, how do you know that? And I was like, oh, I read this book. I think going from that scenario where like I was not perceived as being a fundraiser to being then going into sort of more strategy and business planning and like the real geeky background stuff, which is what I love. I love the geeky background stuff. Was kind of difficult in some ways. So I totally get the imposter syndrome side of things and mental health, like hugely important. So I had my own little problems with a bit of postnatal depression, which just like kind of crushing at the time. We'll just gloss over that. So
I'll put that in the highlights reel.
Yeah, just gloss over mental health. That's how to bring me down.
Simon. Yeah, yeah.
So these are real issues, and I totally get them from a personal and a professional perspective. But I think that the other thing that I've struggled with the charity sector is the lack of performance management and the sort of double standards around performance management as well. You know, the kind of like, oh, well, you know what so-and-so's like kind of thing. And
double standards compared to other sectors?
Do you know what? It's so long since I've done any work in the private sector that, well, my experience of the private sector is like you'd just be fired if you're like not great. And I think that was possibly an exceptional organization that I worked for. So in terms of like mental health and imposter syndrome and recognizing that, how do we support people who are struggling with personal issues, because everybody does at some point in their lives, more than once. So how do we support that, but while maintaining, making sure that there is sufficient performance management in place so that people who are just not performing well and not because they've got mental health sort of challenges or, you know, people who just aren't very good at their jobs. I think we need to be able to support managers and organizations to get the best out of people as well.
Yeah.
So I don't have an answer. I'm just like, this is just something that's on my mind a little bit.
It's seeing the two sides of it where, you know, on an individual level and, you know, by the sounds of it, we both suffered from mental health issues and you want to see the supports there for it. But at the same time, we have to balance that with actually getting our shit done.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, is the line's different for everyone, really, isn't it? The way we manage it for everyone is different. And I don't really know the answer to that either.
Yeah.
Does anyone have an answer to that?
I don't.
Is there an answer to it? Is that a solvable problem? I mean, I'm not sure it really is. Is it? Are any of the problems you're bringing up solvable, Beth?
I say I'm doing this thing. I'm basically doing what I say that I am frustrating, just not raise things and then just leave them and not bring any solution. I don't know. I think it's more about behaviour as managers to be able to build really strong relationships with people within teams so that they're aware and people are comfortable talking about mental health with their manager, even if they don't want to, you know, write a blog post about it. I certainly don't want to write a blog post about it. So I think there are some of those softer skills that managers need and leaders need to be able to support people through things, but also to be able to ensure that they get the best out of the team and are able to, you know, seize opportunities in terms of fundraising as well. You know, we're in a really difficult climate, aren't we, at the moment? Nobody really knows where fundraising is going. That was going to be my
next question is where is fundraising going? I mean, really, like in terms of all the problems we're talking about, maybe you and I aren't best situated to kind of tell us how we get there, but what does the future look like? You know, where do you think the sector is going to settle, or what do you think is an ideal scenario that we would be working in like 20 years? Is it going to look very different? Is the charity sector going to exist in this shape or form? Are we going to have solved any of these issues in terms of diversity and sexual harassment and mental health? Is our fundraising still going to be shit?
It's not shit, is it? Some bits of it are. I think there are some sort of internally infrastructure-y things like sexual harassment and mental health stuff and diversity and equality and all of that. I think that's just part of that. I mean, that's not specific to the charity sector, though, is it? It's like everywhere is sort of talking about this and trying to work out how to move things forward. So yeah, I'm sure that we will, though obviously I have none of the answers. But I think in terms of the future of fundraising, so I did actually speak at another conference recently, which was NCVO's annual conference in April. And Carl Wilding threw me in sort of last minute to speak on the future of fundraising alongside some pretty amazing people. So I was so nervous. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, the imposter syndrome coming out.
Yeah, so one of the people was Paula Mardy, who I used to be PA to. Could you think of anything more ridiculous? I could not think of anything more ridiculous.
That's brilliant.
Speaking alongside him.
That's like a movie.
Oh, you're right, yeah. And Paul De Gregorio and Lisa Harwood.
Great.
So I was yeah. Great. And the things that I sort of mentioned were about, I think that we're going to be talking about income as opposed to fundraising. So I think we need to be thinking about different ways in which we make income. So I sort of floated this notion that we'd be thinking a little bit more about products, which I think other people disagreed with, but I think it really needs to be considered as one potentially significant part of the income mix. So I think the two poles are very much about mission needs to be at the center, which I absolutely completely agree with 100%. But I think when you start looking beyond the people who will engage with something because of the mission, and let's not forget that charities are no longer the only way that people can do good, right? Mm-hmm. But first of all, they get off and do it themselves. Like we've seen through the jungle in Calais and the Grenfell tragedy and things like that. People just do stuff themselves. They don't need a charity. They no longer trust them as they used to do. Where am I going with this? But yeah, to move beyond those people who will engage with the mission, you need to develop products, things, mechanisms that enable them to engage with your organisation. So Mindful Monsters is a good example of that.
What's Mindful Monsters?
So it's basically, I think it's like a set of cards from Scope, mm-hmm. and it's about developing mindfulness with your young child. So it's targeting basically young mums to help them sort of develop that resilience with their children.
Okay.
So it's enabled them to reach out to a new audience.
Because it's an income generator for them. It's for people who are buying a product as opposed to motivated to just hand over money for something they can't necessarily see.
Yeah. And I think then that's the beginning of a relationship with the organization, isn't it? So I think that, yeah, and the various other ways in which you can make money from trading and or whatever.
Sure.
The sort of more sort of enterprisey side of things. So I think thinking of income as opposed to fundraising is, mm-hmm. is the key thing. And I think we're going to see a shift in the way that organizations sort of work. So I think people talk a lot about this blurring of boundaries between private, public and third sector. And that's all really interesting stuff. But if I think about this CVS that I've been working with, Kensington and Chelsea CVS, so it's the borough where the Grenfell tragedy was.
Okay.
And there are a number of issues, a number of challenges with the community there, where there's a lack of trust between residents and voluntary and community organisations and the local authority. So Kensington and Chelsea Social Council, the CVS essentially, is looking at how do they get involved in direct community healing, community development kind of work. And that's not, they are not in any way going to be in competition with voluntary and community organisations in the borough. There's still going to be a huge capacity building element there, but they're seeing that there is a need for them to operate in a different way, enable to enable them to do that capacity building with those VCOs. Mm-hmm. So I think like that feels like, you know, sort of crossing a line, but to me in a really good way. So yeah. I think we'll maybe just see organizations operating in slightly different ways.
Just adapting to, I suppose, the society we're in now. I mean, we live in a capitalist society. It's evolved a lot. Is it about charities trying to change and keep up with that?
What, to become more like capitalist and private sector?
I don't know. Do they, or do they? I mean, is there a place for a charity sector in the world, in a world like this?
Well, yeah, I think so.
Oh, good. Well, that's really.
Yeah. Well, I thought I said no. That you really are trying to bring me down.
Yeah, you'd have to rebrand. Yeah. Rebrand your podcast. Yeah. And what's the future for you? What are you doing? You pushing your podcast out? You're trying to get some bigger and bigger guests. Are you still enjoying it?
Yeah, I'm still enjoying it. But like, whereas you're like really relaxed about it and just like, yeah, I'm just going to speak to these people and put it out, and it's great. And I love that approach. Like, as you've gathered from this, I'm a bit more like high stress. So yeah, and Mr. Crackles is a sound engineer, so I have to edit everything properly. So yeah, so it takes me a little bit longer, but I'm kind of doing it for fun, as well as sort mm-hmm. of broadening my networks as well. And I've actually learned loads from it too.
Yeah.
So I'm going to continue with the podcast. Got some really interesting people lined up for that. Including James Joplin, who's director of Samaritans in Scotland.
Oh, cool. Wow.
And he's got a really interesting background in fundraising as well. So really looking forward to that. It's also like an excuse for a jaunt to Edinburgh without the children as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's technically work, Beth, isn't it?
So I'm keeping on going with that. I'm looking at developing some fundraising training locally mm-hmm. around the Sheffield, Yorkshire area, because I deliver training for NCVO, which I'll be doing next week.
So where's the best place for people to find you if they want to reach out to you? Where are you most active?
Twitter at Beth Crackles. You can look at my website, bethcrackles.com, or Cracking Charity Chat podcast is on SoundCloud and iTunes.
It's a good name.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, you've got to use it. If you call Crackles, you've got to.
Yeah, it's excellent. It works well.
Thank you.
What's the first social media you check every day? Is it Twitter?
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
Twitter and I'm getting a bit fed up with Facebook.
Yeah,
it's just basically loads of people that like I used to know 20 years ago, and I don't know why I'm still on it. I think I'm on it basically because of the fundraising chat group.
Yeah, which is
really
excellent.
Because
I shut down my Facebook last year, and I do miss the fundraising chat. And that actually really nothing else. I don't really miss anything else. I'm very happy to have got. You know, if you want to talk about depression, get rid of Facebook. It really, really helps.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, obviously, we both have to now pick up our children, our own children. And so I'm going to leave you there. But thank you very much for making the time to come on and chat to me.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Yeah, well, it's good to put you in the difficult seat.
Like I've really got myself in hot water in various different ways there.
Hopefully. But now you know how your guests feel, and you can be a bit nicer to them.
Yeah, thanks.
Although you're always very nice. But no, I do recommend people listen to your podcast. I like it.
Thank you.
But yeah, all right. We'll speak to you again, I hope.
Yeah, thanks, Simon.
Thank you, Beth.
Cheers.
You've been listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and head over to changefundraising.com to learn more or get in touch with Simon. Or don't, whatever, you're big enough to make your own decisions.
Hello, this is Morgan Freeman. For discounts on Simon's best-selling online fundraising courses, go to www.changefundraising.com/training and use coupon code podcast. Complete them in your own time, wherever you want. Get busy living or get busy buying.